Hi, it's Garen with Shamrock Roofing and Construction. Need a new roof fast? Consider Shamrock Roofing and Construction. Our rapid repair team will get you a quote within 24 hours and will always repair before we replace. One call does it all. ShamrockRoofer.com.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 minute drill on the program.
Second half of the program begins right now with the 2 minute drill, brought to you by our friends at Hen House. Great time right now to stock up if you're observing the Lent. Like we are, they have their Lenten Seafood Stock-Up Sale going on right now. Atlantic salmon portions, $5 each. Whole Atlantic salmon fillets, $8.99. Sockeye salmon fillets, $11.99. How about some cold water lobster tails? They're $8 each. Rainbow trout fillets, $5.99. Snow crab clusters, $12.99. Yellowfin tuna steaks, 10 ounces, 2 for $10. Get your seafood on, Kansas City. It's at your neighborhood hen house. The best seafood selection in the city is at the meat counter at your neighborhood hen house. Get there today. And, of course, if you don't want to cook, the delicatessen has a meal for 4 for $20 every single night of the week. And on Fridays in Lent, it's always one of the fish deals, one of the seafood deals. So you can take advantage of that as well. Whether you're just a seafood lover or you're observing Lent, the best selection of seafood in the city is right there at your neighborhood Hen House meat counter. Get there today. See them online at henhouse.com. We get the drill started in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Tim Benz, Pittsburgh Tribune Review, is there. Tim, how are you, sir?
Good talk to you, Seren. How are you?
I'm doing well. What's the future of Ben Roethlisberger going to ultimately end up being?
Well, it looks like, at least I think he's going to be back for next year. I mean, if this falls apart, both sides are going to look really dumb as a result, because they've put a lot out there to make it sound like it's just a matter of course before the contract is signed and Ben is back under center for 2021. I kind of thought it was 60-40 all the way along. I'm bumping that up a little bit because they've both been so public about it. But I don't know. I think a lot of that might have to do with both sides doing some preemptive damage control if they can't get it across the finish line. Like, you know, if the way Pittsburgh tends to work, people will be very critical after losses, very critical after the season, and then things soften and mollify, and the Steelers put a spin on everything, and everybody wants to believe it, and then we assume they're going 12-4 and winning the North again. So I think they felt this going a different direction. I think they feel like there's more frustration this time, and I think they feel like a lot of it is focused on Ben. And if they decide to bring Ben back for one more year, they don't want it to get too bad too fast. So it's, okay, we're probably going to get this done. Let's make it sound like it's definitely going to get this done. And now they better make it happen.
Should they bring him back? Is there anything left in the tank?
I think there's enough left in the tank that you might occasionally get a game like you saw against the Indianapolis Colts last year. And there might be enough in the tank that they can win 4 or 5 games anyway, even if he's not great. But, you know, I don't think he's the guy that got them to 11-0. I think he's much closer to the quarterback that we saw over the last 6 weeks than the one that we actually saw during the first 10. And this notion of, well, they just got to put better players around Ben. Okay, do that. Okay, sure. Rebuild the line, get a front line running back, replace Juju, and get a second tight end who can block behind Ebron. Sure, do all that this offseason while you're keeping his money on the payroll, while you've got one of the worst cap situations in football, while we're in the middle of a pandemic that's flat in the salary cap. Yeah, sure. Do that if that's the explanation. It's comical to me.
It is, and I'm with you. And look, the Chiefs made it really difficult to talk salary cap because they were able to keep everybody. People don't want to look into how much they're going to pay for it on down the road. And so I know exactly what you're talking about with the Steelers. Like, could you do it? Yeah, you can. And the Chiefs did it, and they were trying to win back-to-back, and I have no problem with it. But there's, you know, they're now $19 million over and have like 35 guys under contract. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of maneuvering, and that's where Pittsburgh is. And reality of this situation is this. They have no choice with that $41 million number. Like, what would be the smart thing to do? Cut bait and run and look for another guy and get into the Sean Watson sweepstakes. But once you, or Dak Prescott or Russell Wilson or whoever, but once you go down the road that you did, the decision on who would play quarterback, it's just about how much he's going to make, but who would play quarterback at 21 for the Steelers was made like 3-4 years ago whenever they did this extension, because the cap number is so high, you weren't going to be able to get to a point to where you had any other options anyway. They have no choice but to be married to each other, right?
Or if they cut him, you just go with Mason Rudolph, and what's the difference going to be? An extra 2 losses, maybe 3, and if so, is that the worst thing in the world? Like, is it the worst thing in the world that if you have one really bad year, you've moved on from the previous quarterback, you've moved on from the quarterback that you drafted that thought be the next guy, that might be the next guy and isn't, and now you've got tons of cap room, the cap is going back up, we would think, and you're going to be in a much better draft position potentially to draft a guy if you don't want to sign a guy, because anybody who's not getting dealt this year might get dealt next year. So,
right.
You know, this is like this quarterback carousel and quarterback musical chairs every season now. So, I don't know. I wish they would just be honest about it and say, hey, you know what, things went bad with Hines Ward, Troy Polamalu, and James Harrison on the way out the door. You know, we've stayed in touch with most of the 70s guys. We like that better. We want to keep Ben so we can play kissy face for the next 20 years of reunions, because you people in Pittsburgh like that. Just be honest with us. We know who we are. Just tell us that. And then I think it'll be a lot more transparent.
Tell me this. All right, so while this and the outside view, right, you're in there and have your finger on the pulse of every different cap cut, who you could cut, who you could move, who you could renegotiate. But from the outside, it's not only is Ben Roethlisberger going to be back, but you're going to add J.J. Watt because his brother plays for the team, right? That's going to happen as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. So this is what we were told. We were told that Ben would play for free. That's what Ben put out there. And we were told that J.J. would play for next to nothing just because he wants to come here and play with his brothers. Well, now I'm hearing what? J.J.'s going to make like $15 million. And if Ben wanted to play for free, this would have been done by now. So, I, yet again, as soon as somebody says it's not about the money, it's about the money.
Yeah, absolutely. What's the future of Juju Smith-Schuster?
Probably in a condo somewhere in New York or a nice little place on the Strip in Vegas. That's what I would think. Those are the two rumors that keep popping up more than anything. You know, I don't see the Steelers being interested enough in paying him with their cap situation being what it is to warrant a bidding war against New York, Vegas, or maybe one of the other places that might try to lure him. Indianapolis has been thrown out there. I've heard about the Packers potentially too, but, you know, they're actually not all that bad off at receiver. You know, if Juju were to walk away, that's one free agent, even though he caught so many passes and was good in the red zone last year, that's one free agent that I think would be easier to offset the losses of next year than lesser players on their team that are leaving. Like, Juju's better at his job right now than Al Villanueva, but I don't know who they have at left tackle. I know they have 3 other decent receivers besides Juju, so... I think he's going elsewhere.
If a team like the Chiefs were to get involved in Juju Smith-Schuster, what are they getting beyond the obvious, what we saw with the video, the TikTok video on teams' logos and everything? Is he a good teammate? Is he good in the locker room? Because that is something that's important to the Chiefs.
Yeah, aside from social media traction, what are you getting? You're getting a guy who's tough. You're getting a guy who can block. You're getting a guy who is good in the red zone. You know, the big plays that you saw from him as a freshman and sophomore, if you will, haven't been there the last 2 years, one with Ben, one without. He ran a lot of short stuff. He's good out of the slot. He's strong out of the slot. Like I said, he hasn't hit the home run play. He's had some big mistakes at inopportune times, some crucial fumbles late, had some drops along with everybody else, but not as much as everybody else last year. Now, I think you're getting a very good 2. You're not getting anybody who's going to be a big play 1.
Okay. Finally, let's go to college basketball. Jeff Capel, the guy who seemingly every time he's on the bench at Duke is an absolute beast when it comes to closing top-tier talent. Thought it was a great hire by Pitt. Thought it was going to work. Thought the talent was going to be there. Whatever mistakes he made at Oklahoma, I thought he was going to learn from, and this was going to be a great marriage. Right now, it's not looking so good. Players leaving. What's the situation with Jeff Capel at Pitt?
I think it's far from saying the heat has turned up on him, because Pitt fans are so scarred by coaches leaving and by the Kevin Stallings experience that they're going to let this one play out a little bit more. But you're right. I mean, you can no longer say Jeff Capel's got him pointed in the right direction. Like, that was always Jeff's got him pointed in the right direction. You hear that over and over again. It became such a cliche, but it's not the right direction. It's the wrong direction now. Like, this is the third year in a row he's pulled the Tomlin and collapsed late in the season. His February and March record is almost as bad as Tomlin's in December of late. So, you know, Pitt fans are noticing that. And, yeah, Xavier Johnson, that was just an issue where those two were rubbing each other the wrong way, but they lost McGowan's too the previous year. Adis Toney probably wasn't going to play the rest of this year anyway. It's the wild, wild west when it comes to transfers. Let's see what happens with Champagne. That would be the major loss. That would be the biggest red flag if Champagne leaves. But, yeah, this is – it started to become a story. The Panthers never became a big enough story under Capel yet where they were a real talking point in Pittsburgh. And now they're starting to become a talking point for some of the wrong reasons.
Yeah, no doubt. Tim Benz, you're the best, buddy. Thanks for the great stuff. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again down the road.
Yeah, anytime, man. Thanks for having me on.
Tulsa, Austin, Oklahoma City, Seattle.
Chuck Powell, KJR in Seattle, Washington's next. Chuck, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you, Seren?
Living the dream, right? Watching, you know, yeah. I mean, I guess – not good times in Seattle, though, all around. When you got to fire your president, Kevin Mather, on the baseball side, and your star quarterback is asking for a trade. Let's see. I assume Russell Wilson and getting him happy, keeping him there, or getting rid of him, one or the other, is the bigger story.
Really slow week this week in Seattle. Really tough to find topics. You know, and it scrambled a little bit, you know, had to play a few games on the air. Talked a lot about our favorite rom-coms, you know, segments like that to get us through the week. Mm-hmm. No, it was crazy. You know, suddenly we had this front burner topic, and Mariner baseball is already, you know, it's got its group of naysayers here in town that, you know, it was killing season for Mariner, those that have turned away from the Mariners. And so we had that to deal with, and Jerry DePoto, the general manager, had fires to put out everywhere within the organization. And then they might have gotten saved because midway through the week, we shift to the Russell Wilson, you know, trade rumor escalation that has taken place here in town. And so that dominated the last 2.5 days. So that's it was a busy week. You know, there were no shortage of opinions thrown around on KJR, I'll tell you that.
What happens ultimately with Russell Wilson, in your opinion?
I think long-term there probably will be a divorce, but in the interim, it's really hard to move away from him. I mean, first of all, you're in a championship window. You don't exactly have a spring chicken as your head coach, and you know how hard it is to find a franchise quarterback, and once you have one, you want to lock him in. They have a contractual situation here where even if they tried to trade him, they'd have to eat. The cap goes up like another $30 million because of the signing bonus that they gave him. So the idea of trading him for like Deshaun Watson, for example, suddenly you're going to be paying $75, $80 million on quarterbacks alone on your salary cap. So it's going to be very difficult to trade him. It's going to be a very difficult PR decision, you know, to try to convince the fan base that you just didn't trade away their favorite player for nothing. So I think for short term that we have a rift between player and organization for the first time in his 10 years in Seattle. And I don't think that it will come to a head this year. It just doesn't make sense. But if the organization can't figure out a way where Russell Wilson feels like the offense is catered to him by next year, I think what his agent did is he laid tracks. He laid groundwork for, if we don't feel better about this offense next year, we're only squeaking now. We're going to get loud next year. And I think that maybe the Seahawks will feel like we've got our ducks in a row a year from now, and that we might be able to accommodate you and maybe move on and get a bunch of draft compensation in return, because it's been a long time since we've had high draft picks here in Seattle. And I think John Schneider kind of salivates at the idea of seeing what he can do if he actually had some high picks to work with.
Russell Wilson for Dak, not going to happen?
No. That's what's funny is Mark Rogers leaks out to Adam Schefter these four teams. Well, you're not really serious about being traded. You know, the rumor is that we flipped a piece of paper to Pete and John. these are the four teams that we would be willing to be traded to. And it's like, well, we're only going to trade you if we get the right kind of compensation. And the four teams that you put on this piece of paper, there's no chance. There's no way, Sorin, they're going to trade Russell Wilson unless they get a top five pick back. Miami, Jets, you want to put them on the list? All right, maybe we can talk because of the draft capital that the Jets currently have, the draft storage facility that the Dolphins have accumulated in. They're like squirrels. They got draft picks slammed in their cheeks the last couple of years, and they've gone and put them in the tree for the winter. Or maybe Carolina, if David Tepper is just that desperate for a quarterback, as rumor says he is, then maybe that would be a candidate as well. But I just don't think it's going to get there, not this year. I just don't think that the relationship is damaged enough that they would entertain actually moving him. But stranger things, I suppose, have happened.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, let's talk about the Mariners. First of all, my opinion is, you know, the dumb thing is obviously talking about manipulating service time, but everybody does it. That's not news.
Yeah.
Everyone's known it. And frankly,
right.
Look, I made the point here. But we can get to his other comments here in a second. But just on that, the original story blew up with, oh, my God, he talked about service time. Then later we heard about the, you know, paying a translator and overpaid, you know, veteran player. All that kind of stuff came out later. First of all, the first thing on the translator was, well, I'll get to it in a minute. I said I'd do that in a minute. Let's talk about manipulating the service time. I get why Jared Kelenic, you know, wants to be up. But I said here, my topic today was, okay, everyone's down on Seattle because they suppressed his service time. Brady Singer just put a full year in 60 games, right? He started like 10 games, and now 1 year is gone. I said, so when 26 rolls around, and if Brady Singer's signing a $300 million deal with the Yankees, when you could have had him for an extra year, if you'd have just kept him down 6 days, you tell me that you're going to be happy campers in Kansas City? Like, I got no problem with Seattle not burning the year with Kelenic, because now they can go this year, just leave him down for a couple of weeks, and they get another year deeper into it. That, to me, is smart GMing.
Yeah, I don't like the rule. I think it will change. If I were the Players Association, I would make the rule change, because you've decided that you're no longer going to pay us when we're old. So you're then at least going to pay us when we're a little younger. I think it is going to change. I think the Players Association will hold out to maybe eliminate this or at least change it considerably. But as it stands right now, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's as I said before, it's killing season on the Mariners here in Seattle. And you have to sometimes educate, you know, people to, this is going on everywhere. The Chicago Cubs did. Theo Epstein became available, and all these Mariner fans wanted to hire Theo Epstein. He did it with Chris Bryant. Chicago won a World Series. Houston Astros, let's put them on Sports Illustrated. What a beautiful rebuild. They did the same thing with George Springer in Houston. So this is something that certainly when you're a mid to small market club, like, you know, you have in Kansas City, like we have here in Seattle, you have to take advantage of these opportunities. It'd be nice if you didn't. You know, it'd be nice if you Juan Soto'd this thing and he starts playing baseball tomorrow and he dominates the league. That'd be great. But right now, there is a belief that he's just not had enough minor league time. Whether that's true or not, you know, you have an opportunity to kind of hold on to him for a couple more weeks, and it gives you financial leverage. So people need to understand that that's, even though I don't like that aspect of baseball, as long as it exists, you're almost crazy not to take advantage of it when you can. So I'm with you 100%. I mean, this kid is supposedly special, and I think he deserves a lot of criticism for what he did when he went to Bob Nightingale. You know, he needs to be set down by the veterans, the few veterans on this team. And, you know, Chris Bryant didn't squeak, and Chris Bryant won an MVP. He still hasn't squeaked as loud as Kelenic did to the media, a guy that's never even seen a major league pitch. I like him a lot. He's got a different edge to him. There's a cockiness that is off the charts, but he needs to learn to, you know, crawl before he walks. And I think what he did by going to Bob Nightingale and basically calling his general manager a liar was wrong. And by the way, this all starts with Kevin Mather being 1,000% wrong and he needed to be let go. I'm glad he's gone, and I think that the Mariners are going to be better off without him being an obstacle in the way of this rebuild and this progress that they've shown. But Jared Kelnick did not help matters by doing what he did.
Yeah, no doubt. Chuck Powell in Seattle, you're the man, buddy. We appreciate it. Have yourself a great weekend.
All right, man. Be good.
Travis Hancock, Hornets pregame and WFNZ. Hornets pre and WFNZ. I like that. Travis, how are you, my friend?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me. I'm being attacked by my dog right now, so hopefully this goes okay. I've tried to.
That's all right. No, we're good. We're good. We love dogs, so the more the better. He or she?
It's her name's Mabel. She's a she, and she right now, she wants to be on the radio so bad, so I apologize that she's distracting anyway.
Mabel, you're welcome anytime, dear. We're big fans of the pets, so come on in, girl. Travis, let's start with the quarterback position, Teddy Bridgewater. You know, I get wanting to upgrade to Deshaun Watson, but is it like we got to get somebody right now? Is there a rift between Bridgewater and organization right now?
Yeah, it feels like there's a rift, and it started around midseason. They had a terrible finish to a game against Minnesota, where he came out afterwards and blamed the coaching staff for the miscommunications. And then about 2 weeks later, they had another situation against Green Bay where Matt Rhule blamed Teddy Bridgewater for something. So it hasn't really been quite the same since then. This offseason, the Panthers don't really mention Bridgewater's name. Matt Rhule at the Senior Bowl wouldn't really acknowledge Teddy Bridgewater's name. We had new GM Scott Fitterer on the show a couple weeks ago, and I asked about trying to find quarterbacks, and he didn't mention the quarterback that's here at all. So they haven't talked about Teddy Bridgewater for whatever reason. He unfollowed them on social media, because that's what you do in 2021 when you're mad. So he unfollowed them. They don't mention his name. It's a mess. He's one of the nicest guys in the league. Somehow we managed to have a rift with the nicest quarterback in the league.
The dreaded unfollowing. I love it. All right, so – like, what is – we hear three first-round picks for Deshaun Watson. What is real? What do you think the Panthers would give for Deshaun Watson, and do you believe that they're the front-runner?
Yeah, with the aggressiveness of David Tepper, who knows? Like, if they think that three first-rounders may get it done, but they're not quite sure, would they go four? Like, is four the line of demarcation? Is it – you know, we've heard the Texans want defensive players. So I don't know. You got to be careful, too, as you know. Like, you also have to try to make trades and keep your team still attractive for Deshaun Watson because he has no trade clause. So, like, you could have this whole package, and if you throw in Christian McCaffrey, and if Watson's like, well, no, I want McCaffrey.
Right.
Well, that messes up that play. And if he says, no, I got to make sure the defense is good. I want Burns or Jeremy Chan. Well, then what do you do? It's a very unique situation, especially – when Watson, as we always talk about, has that no-trade clause where you could have the perfect package set up for him and he could say, I don't like that. I don't want to go there. I want to play with all the wide receivers or whatever. So, I mean, we can talk about the picks and the players. It's just on whatever Deshaun Watson dictates. Deshaun Watson holding the league hostage right now, basically, except for Kansas City for the most part.
I would be happy to give any defensive player or all of the defensive players – and lessen the picks to get Deshaun Watson. To me, you keep your offense strong. I watched the Chiefs team with a defense that just sucked
right. In
2018 be a D Ford offsides penalty away from going to the Super Bowl. You can have the best defense. If you have no offense, you're going nowhere. You can have the best offense. If you have no defense, you might be in the Super Bowl. And so I would do everything I can to protect the offense, and I'd give them any defensive player they want, try to minimize how many draft picks I have to give them, but go get the quarterback. That's, to me, the recipe for how you build successfully. And we'll see
one
again.
Thing, yeah.
You go ahead.
The one thing I think would make him not want to play here would be we have absolutely no earthly idea who the left tackle is going to be for the Panthers. No clue. There's not many in-house options. Russell Okung was hit or miss last year, whether or not he wanted to play football half the time. The in-house guys are not good. They're trying to – we don't know. They have the eighth pick in the draft, but if they wanted to – I don't know what they're going to do at left tackle and how you sell that to Deshaun Watson. Like, yeah, we have the receivers and McCaffrey and Joe Brady, offensive coordinator. He's probably going to ask, based off the Houston experience, hey, what's the left tackle plan? I have no – they could put a recycling bin at left tackle for all I know. I have no idea what they're going to do at left tackle to protect whoever the quarterback is.
Yeah, and that's going to be something they're going to have to get fixed before it's all said and done. All right, tell me, Roy Williams, one of his classic little, you know, tantrums at a press conference. I think the question's legit. Maybe it could have been asked with a little better tone or a little bit more tactfully. But, you know, answering for why you scheduled a game that got you beat, that is what fans want to know. I'm sorry if you don't like the question, Roy, but fans do want to know. What was the thought process? You know, I mean, would you have preferred, how did you lose to this dog with fleas with a losing record? Like, would that have made you feel better? What's the reaction to Roy's latest little tantrum?
Well, we've had a long discussion about that today because, look, I've said to you before, I'm a Duke guy, but I understand what Duke is naturally to people. I understand how people feel about Coach K. I'm not denying that. But Coach K, for everything that he does, just comes under immense fire from national media, from all the blog sites that you know I'm talking about. They just go after K. And I've been thinking, like, Roy hasn't had exactly the best year either in terms of Zoom conference behavior. You know, he dropped F-bombs in January at a reporter. He wasn't calling the reporter that, but he was dropping F-bombs at the guy over a question. He stormed out of this one. Like, there's a lot of heat on K for the questioning of the student reporter, and I get it. I don't quite understand the whole thing either. But it's not exactly like Roy's been an angel either on the other side of town here. But Roy has the more folksy demeanor, and he's not as hated nationally as Coach K is. So it's laughed off more. It's more like, ha-ha, there goes Roy. There goes daggum Roy. He's being Roy again. Where if Coach K walked out of a presser like that, then it's like there's going to be a Senate hearing on Coach K's behavior that Roy Williams doesn't have to go through.
Jalen Johnson, is Duke truly better without an NBA talent on their roster?
Yeah, for whatever reason. That performance against Syracuse, I don't mean to bring that up again, but that performance against Syracuse, that was that felt like old Duke. The energy was there. They're hitting shots. I think there's more defined roles. I don't think Jalen Johnson wanted to play any sort of defense whatsoever. And they throw this big kid in, Mark Williams, who's a 7-footer that rim protects, and everyone kind of plays their role. Yeah, I don't think Jalen Johnson was committed to the cause. I think that he was using Duke as the stepping stone, which they, you know, the one and done to do. But some like Zion and R.J. Barrett, they embrace the process. They embrace going through it. They care. I don't think Jalen Johnson cared to be there, and I think it showed on the court at times.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, Hornets at number 7. Nice little story that they're creeping into the playoff picture, or building something that can last and maybe get up towards the top half of the playoffs.
Oh yeah, it's been a whole lot of fun. The brand of basketball is exciting. Bill Simmons from the Ringer today put him on number 1 on his most exciting teams to watch on League Pass, which I don't even think we cracked the top 47 of that in recent years in terms of exciting teams to watch in basketball. So it's different. It's fun. The combination of LaMelo Ball with, you know, Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier has been fantastic, especially down the stretch of games. They play a fun brand. It's fun. You know, it's hard to really sort of figure out the pecking order of the East, because as you know, they one game here or there either way, it puts you at 5 or down to 10. It's wild in the East, man. Between 4 and 13, it's like 1 or 2 games different. It's insane, but the Hornets are in the mix, and you know, with the play-in tournament too, that helps. Teams are more alive, you know, in the 9, 10, 11, 12 range too. So, man, it's been a whole lot of fun, and we've been through a lot. We've been through basketball hell since they became the Bobcats in return in 2004. So to have just an exciting brand of basketball that's been a focus nationally. There's a lot of national people talking about the Hornets really for the first time. For the first time since probably LJ and Zoe were here back in the early to mid-90s.
Yeah, now I know the basketball fans there, and I want the NBA to work there in Charlotte. Great city. Always, you know, I've only been there a couple of times, but enjoyed my time there, and I'd like to see the basketball fans rewarded there in Charlotte. Always rewarding for us to talk to you, Travis. We appreciate it. Travis Hancock there in Charlotte, North Carolina. Great stuff. Have yourself a great weekend, my friend.
You guys enjoy it anytime. I appreciate it.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Seren Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All All right, the Jazz, end of the hour answer. Before Jamal Charles came along, this man's 84-yard touchdown run was the longest in Chiefs history. Who is he?
How I think I know this one, but how long is Jamal Charles? 91 or something?
Yeah, 91 against the Saints.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. 85 this guy had?
84.
84.
At Seattle, 1979.
Steve Bono has the longest run by longest touchdown run by a quarterback I know in Chiefs history. Is that an NFL record? So for a while there, I had it in my head.
I think it was, and I think Terrell Pryor finally passed him up.
But is it not fitting that Terrell Pryor would break the record held by Steve Bono? And does that speak to how relevant the record is?
Yes. You know, Bono was 76. I think Terrell Pryor was like 80, 83 or something like that. By the way, there's a fantastic video about 8 minutes long where this crew, with great graphics, they completely deconstruct Steve Bono's touchdown run. I'll try to find the link and put it out. It is fascinating to watch.
How it happened.
It is unbelievable. You're like, wow.
It's a good ball fake.
Yes.
And then it's like the defense was clearly, well, Steve Bono will never, ever run.
Yeah. There's all kinds
of analytics.
They don't even
realize he's got
it.
The ball until he's like 35 yards down the field.
No. He was.
Who was that against?
Cardinals. 95.
Yeah, figures. Inept organization. The name that's in my head is Ted McKnight.
That's it.
Okay.
The pride of Duluth, Minnesota.
I will take it. Ted McKnight, still here in Kansas City. Now television actor Ted McKnight.
Oh, yeah?
Has he got a K? You know how I always like to write these down. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I'll
it
just
is.
Read one day.
Yeah,
K-N-I-G-H-T. Jazz answer was Ted McKnight.
Yeah, not to be confused with Ted Knight.
Right.
Oh, Billy.
Ted Knight, the Judge Smales in Caddyshack.
Judge Smales and Ted Baxter put a couple of. And then,
Ted
of course,
Baxter
the
and Mary Tyler Moore.
The cartoon. I can't think of the character's name. It's too close for comfort.
I don't remember his character. What was that?
Too Close for Comfort was the show, and he drew the character Space Cow or something like that.
Yeah. I think what was the name of the show? My Two Hot Daughters?
Yeah. At least one.
Yeah. Oh. Well, there's a shot at the other one.
That's the way it was portrayed. They dolled up one like they do a lot of times. They doll one up, and one's the smart one and one's the hot one. And it's I guess they don't think we can handle two of either.
Or somebody who's smart.
Or both. I guess they didn't think that was possible in 1983 or whatever it was.
Yeah, he had quite a career, man.
Yep.
Judge Smales is one of the most iconic characters ever. Oh. Did you know there's a great, if you ever happen upon it, I don't know where I saw it, if it's like on American Movie Classics or what, but there's a they did a series of like the makings of, I don't know what it's called, if it's behind the scenes or. And they did it for, like, Ghostbusters. They did it for Animal House. They did it for Stripes.
Oh, wow.
They did it for Caddyshack. And they just go back through it. And, like, Caddyshack, apparently Ted Knight was, like, furious the whole filming because everybody was stoned and high all the time. And he was, like, the one guy who wasn't. And he's like, come on! Can we get the shot in?
What was his problem?
Why wasn't it? Was 1978 or whatever. Why wasn't he high?
We're waiting.
Oh, God. What a
that movie iconic. Still works, man. It
so
still
great.
Works.
Remember when we made, what intern was it we made go watch Caddyshack?
I remember that.
We're talking about, like, I haven't seen it. It was made that. I'm not going to watch it. I'm like, you will go watch it or you get an F.
And you will file a book
and
report.
We made them go watch it. They came back. They're like, okay, that was really good. That was really good. Like 5 years ago, we made some, you know, 19, 20-year-old kid go watch it. And he came back. He's like, all right, I get it. That's good. That's good. That's one thing I give my daughter. Daughters? Yeah, I will. Because they watched. Actually, I'll put them both equal. Because whenever I try to break out an old movie for them, one of them's always like, yeah, okay. I tell them what the premise is. And they're like, yeah, that sounds good, Dad. The other one's always like, this sucks, Dad. Why are you making me watch this? And at the end, they always end up liking it. So now there's all this pressure on me to not wheel out a turd, right? Like, I got to make sure it's got to be really good, because they now trust Dad when Dad goes, here's an old one, but you're going to dig it. Like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Ah, come on, Dad. I don't know what's that. Like, listen, we're going to watch this, because one day you're going to need a job, okay? And you're going to be at a job interview, and the guy's going to say something, and a Ferris Bueller line is going to be the funniest thing you could ever respond with. And the guy's going to be like 58 or 59 or 60 or 64 or whatever that you're talking to, and you're going to drop this Ferris Bueller line on him, and he's going to think you're the smartest, funniest person that ever lived. It's like, how does this snot-nosed punk drop a Ferris Bueller on me?
Got it. The Breakfast Club.
You're
going to
watch the iconic cultural phenomenons. You are going to watch, and you are going to be armed with those lines.
Breakfast Club, Better Off Dad.
Have you showed them Ghostbusters, I'd assume?
I haven't. I want to. That's one of my – I want to.
It's my favorite movie of all time, man.
Oh, it's so great. Where do these stairs go?
Up.
They go up. It's so great. All right, go ahead. Go ahead. He has everybody go before him.
Someone
so
earlier,
many great subtle lines.
Someone on Twitter a couple weeks ago was tweet out a random line from a movie that everyone who likes the movie will know, and it's like a third of them were from like the five movies we've just named.
Oh yeah, those are such iconic. Bill Murray's in so many of them, right?
Yeah.
Like what a career, and the best is like you run into Curtis runs into Bill Murray at a Royals game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, him and his brother, were friends of
Brian Doyle, who you see in a lot of movies
yep,
as well.
Yep. They're friends with Ned Yost. They were at the game, and we were there.
Why is Ned Yost friends with Bill Murray?
I don't know. Ned Yost is friends with so many people. You would be amazed, I'm sure. There's just years of maybe they met through Atlanta through racing. I'm not sure what the connection there was, but
Bill Murray's not like Bill Murray's from Chicago.
Yeah.
He's not a stock car
I know.
Guy. Well,
I know.
That's not it. Well, he's from Chicago. Yep. I doubt he's a hunter.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, but we were there one night. They had an issue with one that was Ian Kennedy or somebody was late. They had to go get late, so there were two of us down there waiting at the very end. And I think they thought all the reporters were gone. It was just us, and like we're both like, what's Bill Murray doing here? And I think Mike Moustakas had just had their first child, so they were over seeing the kid, and hey, it's Bill Murray, cool. And they walked by, and he sees me, he goes, hey, like, hey, how you doing? Like a little smile, nod the way. So I went upstairs, I'm like, I'll be damned, Bill Murray was just down in the Royals clubhouse. How cool is that? I get my bags, I go down the elevator, I walk out, and they're right in front of me as I walk out. And I said, Mr. Murray, could you please, I got to get a picture. He goes, oh, sure, no problem. And as Brian Doyle Murray wasn't going to be in the picture, I'm like, no, I want you in here too. You need to be in this picture. So he came over, and the three of us took the shot. And
yeah, $50
amazing.
Bucks as he eats it. I mean, come on, that's in that. You know, or does Brian Doyle say? I can't remember if he does. He go, right. All right, $50 as the smell kid picks his nose. And I can't remember if it's the shoeshine guy that goes, $50 says he eats it, or if Brian Doyle Murray's the one. I can't remember which
guy.
One of them has the line, $50 says the smell kid picks his nose. And then the other one has the line, $50 says he eats it. For the record, Jim Boeheim did not play Spalding. Spalding is the smell kid.
Right,
is the one that's like, I want a hot dog, no, a cheeseburger. I want, you'll get nothing like it.
There's just the scene with Chevy Chase and Danny walking down the thing, giving him all the life lessons.
Oh, yeah.
Me winning isn't. You do. Great grammar.
Be the ball, Danny.
Be it. May. Make it.
Make it happen.
Make your future, Danny.
Yeah. So great. You got to watch that making of. If you haven't seen it, look for it on YouTube. Do whatever. It's really good. If you love Caddyshack, it's a really cool thing to hear what all was going on and who all had tough times and has since had tough times. It's a good watch if you get it. You will definitely enjoy it. Believe me. It's pretty cool. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We will dive into a little NFL television contracts. ESPN looks like it's going to be keeping Monday Night Football. We'll give you the details on it and how that maybe shines a light on what's coming with the other networks. because their deal isn't up for another year. But what it could mean and what it means for the cap, that's next in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are
you?
Actually, no.
They never will.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro, Curtis Siebel, Jed Marshall. With you, some news. ESPN getting their deal done with the NFL. We talked about this. Their deal ends after the 21 season, the rest of the networks after the 22 season. If you want to have a good business relationship, you want to get it done before. And so ESPN kind of balking at some of the numbers. I'll give you this from Sports Business Journal. Disney and the NFL have reached a broad agreement on a new media rights deal that will see ESPN renew Monday Night Football and ABC return to the Super Bowl rotation for the first time since 2006. According to sources, contracts still have not been signed. The two sides have smoothed over enough differences that a deal is very close at hand. Disney expected to pay an increase of up to 30%. Remember, the NFL was asking for a 100% increase.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get a 30% increase. Disney was offering 20%. They go for 30% over the current deal. So they were paying $2 billion per year. They're now going to be paying $2.6 billion. An agreement comes after news leaked last week of statements between the two sides, which initially were so far apart in price that some ESPNers question whether to cut a deal. Clearly, they weren't that far apart. ESPN folks said, we don't comment about this. That report was incorrect. The increase that Disney will pay is far below the other networks. Now, the increase is far below, but listen carefully. As Fox, CBS, and NBC are all seeing the average annual of their contracts double, right? So they're talking about pushing their contracts up times two. ESPN is paying the highest rights fee in the current deal, and the increase aligns Disney's NFL package closer to its competitors. So Disney at, you know, the other ones were at like 1.3. They're going to 2.6. Disney was at 2. They're going to 2.6. Roughly, I'm giving you ballpark numbers here, but ESPN was paying way more. It says Disney will pay more than the other media companies for its Monday Night Football package, and the network will retain the highly coveted highlight rights, which provide year-round programming for ESPN studio shows. An undetermined number of regular season games will be simulcast on ABC, which will produce a Super Bowl for the first time since 2006. I remember when this happened, it was kind of a landmark deal when ESPN signed it. It was all kinds of digital rights as well, right? And those highlights, that's basically it, was to have the ability to have NFL Today, NFL Tonight, whatever you want to call it, whatever their shows are, NFL Now or whatever, and be able to show highlights,
mm-hmm.
right? So that keeps ESPN having those kind of shows where CBS Sports Network, NBC Sports Network, Fox Sports One cannot have those kind of shows. They can have them, they just can't have any highlights, which makes it a lot more difficult to do. The new deal will look a lot like the old deals with CBS and Fox keeping their Sunday afternoon packages and NBC keeping Sunday Night Football. Sources said that CBS, Fox, and NBC will be paying around $2 billion per year for their packages, a massive increase, essentially doubling their current deals. The biggest change will be with Thursday Night Football, which will move from Fox to Amazon Prime and NFL Network. It is unclear what Amazon would be paying. So the NFL stays largely the same. You either need NFL Network or Amazon Prime to be able to get the Thursday night deal. So you're over the air Thursday night, not going to be there because they're not going to have a Fox or a CBS or an NBC or carrying it. So from that standpoint, that changes a little bit. But looks like those TV deals are coming together, and we should have some kind of idea what that salary cap will be, at least from a TV standpoint. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll give you the things you need to know. Actually, that's coming up later. Mike Matheny, I'm sorry. Different. We've got to schedule Mike in next, the manager of the Royals.
The burnt end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, what team won the last Super Bowl shown on ABC? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.